Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hard, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
It's only week two, but it feels like this is a crossroads game.
Crossroads. There you are with those crossroads.
Is this a season crossroads game, potentially, for both franchises?
Yeah, I mean, there's pressure on both teams to win this game for different reasons,
so.
No doubt.
Big game. So if we have a big game, who would we rather talk to about it other than Tom Curran, our buddy from NBC Sports Boston, joining us now. Tom E. Curran with WEEI Afternoons is brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair, and by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. Tom Curran, Stiz, if you could pot him up. I don't know, he's locked on my computer for some reason. Tom, how are we doing this week?
I'm excellent, and I do agree with Ted. This is a really big game for both teams. It's not obviously playoff implications, but it is program buy-in early stages for Mike Vrabel, and they do need signs of proof of concept. And I think for Miami, I know for Miami, after last week's performance and then a week from tonight playing in Buffalo, they really shouldn't lose to a Patriots team that they were twice as good as in terms of wins and losses last year. So it's huge for Mike McDaniel's team to not lose that game.
Tom, I thought you had an interesting back and forth with Mike Vrabel yesterday, kind of along the lines of something I've been talking about, wanting to talk about, and I was glad you asked him about this whole idea of calling plays and maybe sticking with it and running the play, even if it's not the perfect defensive look, and Josh McDaniels and the rules that Drake May has to maybe get out of plays. After you left that back and forth, where I think Vrabel said something to the effect, we're not looking to say I told you so, either side of the equation.
Right.
How do you feel about that part of this early season offensive feeling out process with Josh McDaniels, Drake May, and Vrabel learning to coexist?
I think what's really good about it is that Vrabel is being so open and transparent about his concerns that it's helping us to do our job, but it's a little bit, it knocks us off our, takes us aback a little bit. And I think that Vrabel doing that does engender us to say, well, is he crushing Josh here? So I asked the question to try and get some focus on whether or not, okay, do you mean if the box is stacked and it's clear that you shouldn't run into it, you want to do it to prove a point? And he's like, no, I mean, if there's a linebacker, and this is kind of the instance he used, he paraphrased, but so if there's a linebacker at the second level and he's in the area that you're going to run to, run it anyway. Maybe we can have that player be made to miss, but we have to give some faith and opportunity to the plays that are called. He was saying, don't run it if it's absolutely dead. But I think it's good, and I think it's important to get into that conversation too, because they are new as coach and fellow coach McDaniels and Vrabel. And they're two guys who are very accomplished, probably very type A, very accustomed to orchestrating things in their way. So they have to find a way to get their gears to mesh nicely together and not grind.
Tom, you're a fan of J.J. McCarthy, as am I. He has a huge comeback win. And some of what his teammates were saying, defensive tackle Javon Hargrave said that the J.J. said to him, even after a horrible first half, that he's got us, don't worry about it. Kevin O'Connell said that J.J. had this unbelievable look in his eyes at halftime and said that they don't win that game without J.J. Justin Jefferson says, we knew he had some dog in him when it comes to J.J. You being a fan of J.J. McCarthy, is it those kind of tangible leadership, gutsy, clutch kind of things that attracts you to his game? And is that, you know, maybe something that is missing mm-hmm. from Drake May's game? Like, when you look at the two players, how do you differentiate the J.J. to Drake?
I think that J.J. McCarthy was put into a pigeonhole that when I really started watching him, I'm like, he doesn't fit that. He has plenty of arm. He actually has more than enough arm. He doesn't have a lot of nuance to the shape of his throws, but he has extremely strong arm. I would say it's as strong as Drake May's if you wanted to say velocity. But he needs to get a little more touch. But I do think that he's just as fast as Drake May. Obviously, he's not as big, but I think he can bring you a dual threat opportunity. And he played at the highest level and had great success. So I'm looking at a guy who religiously moves the chains, who was won a national championship, was very accurate, I thought, and had all the arm strength. So that's why I like J.J. McCarthy. I didn't necessarily like J.J. McCarthy at three. I thought the Patriots should have traded back because they had so many needs and taken J.J. McCarthy, in theory, hypothetically, around 11 if they traded down with the Vikings, got their 11th and 21st. That ship has sailed. But I do think there's more than one way to skin a cat. Peyton Manning wasn't like Tom Brady. Tom Brady wasn't like Patrick Mahomes. All these guys are very different. And I don't think that Drake May's attitude or bedside manner, sideline manner, is going to necessarily limit the Patriots from winning. He's not like Jay Cutler and seems disenchanted or disengaged. He's not annoying. Kirk Cousins is a little annoying. I think that Drake May is going to be fine. He just needs to somehow at 22 start getting his brain to operate like a 28 or 29-year-old's. He's just has a very busy brain.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tom. I love J.J. McCarthy coming out of Michigan, and I think the kid's a winner as well. And I think the reason why fans in this area especially wanted to make the comp like Ted was alluding to was because of the fiery demeanor, the ferocity with which he played in the fourth quarter, the manner in which he behaved after the game. And I think fans...
You know who else did that, though? Here's the thing. Scott Zolak did that. And he was a really talented, big, strong-arm, son of a biscuit shooter who had probably as much arm right now as anybody else in the NFL today. He could probably walk out there and throw it as hard as most of them. But there's, you know, Scott was fiery, but you have to combine all the things. I love fiery guys. I thought Brady was. But can you figure out where the friggin' ball is supposed to go first and then worry about firing guys up on the sideline? I don't want to get to the point where I'm like, oh, Drake May doesn't talk to his players enough. And J.J. McCarthy does, because sometimes those guys could go right up your friggin' chimney with a shut up. Just go do your job. Stop worrying about screaming at me over here.
Oh, Fitzy, sorry. I thought you had a follow-up question
I was going to sort of leave.
Original question.
As far as a follow-up, sure. I got a quick one, Andy. Thank you. Tom, rapid fire. The first thing you think will look significantly better for the Patriots Sunday, and now that they'll put all the work in, first thing that's going to look significantly better Sunday will be?
DeMario Douglas.
Ooh. Oh, good one. I like that.
Hope so.
Catches minus 2 yards. You can't exist like that.
Seven targets, Tom. Seven targets. Only two catches.
Yeah, can't have that.
Okay. Want to go to the other side of the wide receiver equation? Do you want to take a victory lap? Because I heard you blowing some severe smoke up the booty before the season started, and he comes out, he averages 17 yards a catch. He's got 100 yards. Is that sustainable? Is that not that those numbers specifically, but do the Patriots have what looks like a number one wide receiver?
The Patriots have their number one wide receiver. I don't know if he would be the number one on any of the other 32 teams, 31. But he certainly can be passable on a team that is, you know, challenged at the wide receiver position. Can you take away Kayshon Booty, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, you can. He's not Devontae Adams. He's not Justin Jefferson. If you want to stop Kayshon Booty, I'm sure that you could do that. But he still will catch the ball. He does get separation. He is solidly built. For a guy his size and weight, he's kind of a heavy fella, strong. So he's going to get open. He's going to get separation. He always catches the ball, in my estimation. Folks can seize on the times that they've seen him drop it. I've watched him in practice, as you have you guys all. He makes some absolutely insane catches, and he does it so religiously. And his body control is so good that I've been saying it since his rookie year, that his body control, his hands are top level. And if he can go to the right spot, keep his ego in check, he can have a long career.
Yeah, I liked his comments after the game, too. Just expecting more from an emotional standpoint to come out in the second half. You know, maybe taking a leadership role, too. So interesting stuff. But, Tom, I want to ask you about Terrell Williams is taking a few days away from the team for undisclosed reasons. He was, had some health issues earlier in the summer. He's missed a lot of time. Is this something that the Patriots should be concerned about? Because, you know, do they have, the middle linebacker coach, Zach Kerr is going to maybe take over play calling duties like he did in training camp. Are they worried about that? Is that something they should be worried about if Terrell isn't able to be as present with this team as maybe they thought he could be?
It's a great question. I do think that coaches and coordinators are actually underrated in the league. And you can't just swap one guy for another and not think it's going to be a problem. You know, Bill swapping in for Adrian Clem to go coach the offensive line, and the size of the coaching staff for the last few years under Bill, it really showed you how important it is to have as many lieutenants as you can. All that said, the preference would be, as it is with any starter and backup, the preference would be to have your starter there, Terrell Williams. And does that mean that Zach Kerr and Mike Vrabel can't combine to do it, or that the other position coaches can't pitch in and the group can do a good job? Absolutely. Does not mean that. But it's always better to have the plan that you put on paper, you know, be able to follow it. So it's a namby-pamby, sitting on the fence answer, but I don't know how much it's going to impact them. I did not love the scheme last week. I don't know if that was a byproduct of the personnel they had available to them. I just don't think that you want to try and blitz Geno Smith as often as they did, especially when in the very recent past, Geno Smith took this exact team and put it over his knee because they blitzed him too much. So I thought that was a bad idea. And even though they only allowed 20 points, probably could have been less.
Tom, I saw Kyle Williams and Efton Chisholm running scout team this week at the practices, if I'm to believe the socials I saw. Any chance we see those guys, if Efton Chisholm would be active this week, more involved in the game plan as well?
I don't know. I mean, it's going to come down to, like, usually what that comes down to, Fitzy, as you know, is who do we need in the kicking game? Who do we need in the linebacker group? Where are we at the quarterback group? If we just released DJ James and Christian Gonzalez is out, so it gets down to that level of, you know, what do we need at that position? Do we need an extra wideout because they might be hot, sweaty, tired? So it really comes down to that. I would say anything is possible in terms of when you get down to the spots between 45 and 53. So I got no prediction.
Tom, you just mentioned his name. What the hell's going on with Christian Gonzalez? What, like, did this the worst hamstring pull in the history of hamstring pulls?
The hamstring.
He had a hamstring transplant. Did you say that?
Did they save the leg?
Did you say hamstring transplant?
Yeah, honestly, God.
Yeah, he's going to have to. I don't know. It's the world's worst hamstring pull. You would think that with a hamstring pull like that, you would have seen it roll up like Ted's bicep back in 1998. But it did not.
And
was it 98, Ted?
98 and 99, but yeah, 98, week 12.
But who's counting?
Yeah. Just rolling up like a lampshade.
So we be concerned, Tom? Like, is this, because I've heard your boys on Tuesdays, Tommy Tuesdays with Jones and Keefe, they keep talking about contract. Is there something going on behind the scenes? Like, and there's no information. The one positive spin I put on this earlier.
No, there's no information.
Isn't that a good thing? Vrabel's gotten rid of all the rats. There's no information coming out about the Gonzo hamstring, but just the 6 weeks without seeing him is starting to be concerning.
Yeah, I mean, this is the world's worst hamstring injury. It did not look like it at the time. No one has said that it's been exacerbated. So it's only going to continue to create the question of, well, why is it taking so long? Is he being really tender about it and trying to get it to 100%. Mike said that's not the case last week. Mike emphasized that he's engaged. The only thing, the only breadcrumb that we have is when he was asked about Christian Gonzalez and his expectations for him this year, he spent zero time talking about on-field expectations and all his time in a one-minute answer talking about what players need to understand about accomplishing things for themselves and getting their contracts and their brands jump-started early in their careers, and how they also have to meet the team halfway. The team will do what it can to make sure that the player is taken care of. Meanwhile, the player has to meet the team halfway. I don't know if that's a wild coincidence that in a question about Christian Gonzalez, Mike went into that conversation, but there would be no quote from the preseason prior to him being injured that would fit better this conversation about Christian Gonzalez when we wonder, where the hell is he?
Tom, I got one more question for you because I think
I got all the time in the world.
Okay, you got a little bit. Just give me 1 minute on Bill Belichick. Bill's come out and he's responded, which is always kind of surprising that he's showing his hand more, but he's responded to the rumors that he wasn't allowing Patriot scouts into the facility, and he told you why, because he feels like he isn't welcome here. For trademark office denies 4 applications filed by him and his girlfriend Jordan Hudson. I mean, kind of a rough week for Bill. Just your thoughts on Bill's response to all these reports.
You know how that term gaslighting has kind of come to light in the last 7 or 8 years? Actually, was came from a play back in like the 40s or 50s. It was the first time it was used. But the term gaslighting, people are like, what the hell? What does it even mean? What Bill did there was the very definition of gaslighting. He's insisting something is a fact that is known to not be a fact, that it makes you in turn, as the listener, question whether or not what you know to be true is actually true. So when Bill says, I'm not welcome there, he's asking the entire region to suspend memory of last offseason when 70,000 people stood on their feet and cheered him, and the crafts were giddy to have him back.
Yep.
I mean, I was he's there. Welcome here.
No, nobody sat down. So, they all gave him a long ovation.
Long.
Yeah.
Bill is welcome here. Do they like him? Do they like what they did? He did to the football team in terms of personnel, and do they like the way that things closed? Absolutely not. Did they tell him that's enough out of you? Can we have your whistle, please? Yes, they did. If you want to present that as unwelcome, better to say, well, they fired me, and they haven't stopped making comments about how bad I did since I left, so I don't want to go there. So they're being mean to me, so I'm going to be mean to them. That's the crux of it.
So that's the mature situation we find ourselves
in.
Very mature. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, enjoy week two. Are we predicting a bounce back win for the Patriots here?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think so. Wow.
I don't know.
0-2, according to you. All right, Tom, thanks. We'll see if you're right next week.
I don't think so. Look, I just talked to here. Check my pod out, Tom Connors Patriots Talk podcast. I had a kid named Marcel Louis Jacques. He is with ESPN, and he was terrific, and he really did a good job laying out how just where Miami is right now and how Miami really friggin' has to win this game. And it's not like they played great, the Patriots, last week. So I need proof of concept before I say the Patriots are going to go and win a game.
All right, Tom. We'll see if we get it this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, guys. See ya.
See you, Tom.
See ya.
Football Talk on WEEI is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's like $2.50 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. When we come back, we'll talk about Tom Curran and his thoughts on the Patriots offense, Mike Vrabel, and everything that's going on that side of the ball. That's next here on WEEI Afternoons.